You're listening to U105 and it's Peter McVerry this morning sitting in for Frank Mitchell. Next on our agenda is the controversial issue of assisted dying. It's been hitting the headlines again this week. A recent poll showed that almost half of GPs would want the option of assisted dying under certain circumstances if they themselves were terminally ill and were going through unbearable suffering. Currently, euthanasia and assisted suicide remain illegal under the law, but one group which is in favour of changing that is Dying in Dignity, and their Director of Legal Strategy, Davina Hare, joins me on the line now. Davina, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Davina, obviously some people on religious and moral grounds will be against the legalisation of this, but can you outline the position of your organisation on why you believe that it should be allowed?
Yes, of course. So Dignity in Dying is a campaign organisation working across the UK, and we want to see a change in the law so that somebody who is mentally competent and terminally ill, so they're expected to die within the next 6 months, can have the choice of control over the timing and manner of their death. And we really believe this is needed, because what we're seeing is people from the UK travelling overseas to Switzerland, like the case of Jeffrey Whaley this morning, at great cost and huge stress to their family, or, you know, even worse, people ending their own lives at home because they feel they have no other option. And of course, for some people, not doing either of those things but having bad deaths, because sadly, even though palliative care is so important and can do so much, it can't ameliorate all suffering. And so people really need this choice.
Yes, and the survey that was done of GPs didn't reach a majority from the GPs who would be in favour. The current position, I think, of the Royal College of Physicians is that they're against it, and they've said they would look at the position, but only if 60% of their membership voted in favour. But is it telling that actual medical professionals, almost half of them, would like to have the option of assisted dying themselves?
Yes, I think it is, and I think that's because, you know, they know that there is amazing care and treatment out there, but there are still some symptoms that just cannot be managed. And if you are, this is not about people cutting short their lives by long amounts of time. It's about people taking control in the final weeks and months of their lives. And I think, you know, to see that almost half of doctors would want that choice themselves does really demonstrate the fact that they know it is needed.
What would you say, Davina, to someone who wants to spend as long as they can with a loved one and who would be totally against something like this, even if all that it robs them of is 24 or 48 or 72 hours with a person who's so central to their life? Why would you not want 2 or 3 days more with your loved ones?
I think, you know, we all treasure time with our loved ones, and especially when somebody is ill or when they're dying. Of course, every moment is absolutely precious. But, you know, what I've seen in my time at Dignity in Dying is actually many loved ones who are left totally scarred by the fact not only that they've seen their mother or their father or their partner dying in pain, but also sort of knowing that their loved one really wanted a choice at the end. They wanted to be able to end it just, you know, a few days or hours earlier so that they didn't have to go through that. And because of the law, that person was absolutely powerless. There was nothing they could do. They just had to suffer. I think, you know, it's not about cutting short people's time. It's just about allowing them the option to avoid that end part of suffering where nothing can be done to help them.
And at this point in time, obviously, it remains illegal in the UK. What were the steps that organisations like your own would need to take in order to put it on the agenda and move it from being illegal to legal?
Well, I mean, what's absolutely critical is, of course, that the Parliament grapples with the issue. And you know, because the law isn't going to change unless a majority of MPs vote in favour for it. But I think, you know, it's not just about MPs. To a degree, they will take their lead from others. And so the fact that we're seeing, you know, more and more people speaking out in the media about why the law isn't working and why it needs to change, the fact that doctors are admitting that they too would like the choice, the fact that the RCP the Royal College of Physicians is having a survey of its members to try and really understand what they think about this issue and what position they think the organisation should take. Those are all really important things. But I would just say to anyone listening, if you want to see a change in the law, it is really important that you write to your MP about this issue, you know, highlight the stories that we're seeing in the media today and tell them that you want them to do something about it.
Yes, and obviously that same position would hold for those who are opposed and who equally have the ability to go to their MP. Has it been discussed very recently in Parliament? Is there any indication of what way a vote might go, or what the thinking would be amongst the elected representatives?
Well, I suppose Parliament is quite divided on this issue. In the House of Lords, there is a majority in favour of a change in the law along the lines I've described to allow terminally ill, mentally competent people to have this choice. The last time MPs voted on the issue, there was a majority opposed to law change. But that was in 2015. We've had a new parliament since then. A lot has changed. So we believe it is time for MPs to revisit the issue.
Okay, Davina, thank you very much for your time this morning. Davina Herr from the Dying with Dignity. And if you have any thoughts, if you have any experience, any personal experience in that, then please, if you're willing to and you would like to, feel free to share them with us and give us a call on 90333 105. You can text us on 07766105, or you can email us on studio@u105.com. That's one of those emotive issues where there may not be a right answer or a wrong answer, but everyone has their own answer. Joining me on the line now is one of our listeners, Joan. Joan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Stuart.
How you doing, Joan? It's Peter here. Joan, thanks very much for joining us. Thank you very much for calling in. You were listening to the conversation that we had there with Davina from the organisation who would be in favour and who would be lobbying for the legalisation of it. And you've personal experience, Joan, of a circumstance similar to that with your own sister. Is that right? Tell me the story, Joan, if you don't mind.
I have. My sister in 2008 was diagnosed with terminal breast cancer, and she was given a maximum of 3 months to live. Now, she was very, very practical. Her first thought was that she didn't want to go through all that, because she'd already been diagnosed previous 8 years earlier of having breast cancer, so she had it for quite some time, but got a terminal diagnosis. But she actually considered going to Switzerland to Dignitas to end her life, and we were obviously devastated, but we were going to go along with her wishes, but we didn't want her to do that. To cut a long story short, Peter, she actually survived a further 8 years, and the 3 months diagnosis just went out the window. Now, I'm not saying it was a great 8 years, because she did suffer, but she did have a quality of life, and if we had sort of encouraged her to go to Dignitas, we would have been robbed of 8 years of her life.
What age of a lady was she, Joan, whenever she got that diagnosis a decade ago?
Initially she was 39, and then she was cancer-free for 8 years. But then in 2008, she died 2 years ago. She'd have been 56 2 years ago. So she died when she was 56.
Was she a single lady, Joan, or had she children?
No, she was married. She has a daughter. She has grandchildren. You know, she's not single. You know, she was actually in America when she was diagnosed, and we had to go out and bring her home. But you know, it was a very bad, obviously a very traumatic time for all of us. But I still think, I sort of agree with the lady who was speaking, because I think to watch somebody suffer as we did in our final weeks was horrific. But I just have mixed feelings, because if we had sort of went along with that, we'd have 8 years of not having her in our lives.
Yes, and you said that at the time, whenever she got the diagnosis, that she very seriously considered going to Switzerland and availing of the service that is available there. And was that something that she considered over time, or was that her initial reaction when she was given the diagnosis, that you think, well, if I've only got 12 weeks, I don't want 12 weeks of pain and suffering for me or my family?
Yeah, well, she was diagnosed initially in 99. And then she was 8 years cancer-free. So she did have, had had cancer and had gone through chemotherapy, et cetera, that type of thing, you know. So she'd gone through everything. So she knew, she never, when she was 8 years cancer-free, she thought she was basically home and dry, you know, so as you would. But she did, it was a very, very, she was definitely didn't want, she said, when it comes to the point where I can no longer look after myself, if I'm in nappy, things like that, I don't want you to watch that. Now, she actually wrote a living will, and the living will, she had said that she didn't want to be kept alive, you know, by machines or be fed, you know, food, things like that. She just wanted it to be as painless and quick as was legally possible. So she actually wrote that and had told us all that. She actually gave me her living will to keep in the event of things turning, you know,
and was there,
you know, turning beyond the point of no return.
Was there a point, Joan, when she said, actually, I am going to go to Switzerland? And what made her not go through with that, or what made her change her mind?
No, she didn't. I think probably, I would say, her husband and her daughter, and probably we're a family of seven children, so we would all have not wanted her to do that. And I think, but I know when in her 8 years that she survived, she said to us, I know you all, I'm glad that I'm still here, but I wake up every morning wondering if today is the day that I take a downturn. And I'm, you know, she goes, I'm actually looking in your eyes and you're all grieving already. She said, I'm still here. So I can understand that, you know, from her point of view.
And if the choice was being made again, if the same circumstance arose again tomorrow, Joan, would you be of the same opinion? Would you want your sister to make the same decision and to stay with you as long as she could and to give everybody another 8 years? Or would you support her in her initial instinct that said, actually, I'd rather go quickly and painlessly?
I think I would support her, to be honest with you. I think watching her for the 8 years, because the sister we knew had gone. She was there physically and she was speaking and she was, but she had gone. The person we knew and loved was no longer with us, to be honest with you. You know, she was just a totally different person. You know, a cancer diagnosis is, or any terminal illness diagnosis, is horrific for the whole family. And you know, thinking of how she wanted it, and you know, I called it, the 8 years, I called it the long goodbye. You know, it was the worst 8 years of our lives. It was good that she was still here, but it wasn't good for her. It wasn't good for her, to be honest with you.
Yes.
So
okay.
I just have mixed feelings on it, if I'm honest.
Yeah, well, we
you
do.
Know, it was good for us to see him still there, but for her, and it is about the person who's dying. It is about them. It's not about us. You know, because regardless when somebody dies that you love, you're going to be grieving. You're the ones left behind. You're the ones that are devastated. That's going to happen whatever way they end their lives. You know, whatever way their life ends, it's going to happen. You're still grieving. We're still grieving. 2.5 years later, I mean, I don't think we'll ever stop.
Understandable, you know? Joan, but we hope that in that grief you're able to remember your sister in a positive way, and hard as it is, we're very grateful for you for talking to us this morning, because that your experience will cast some more light on it and offer another opinion that in some ways agrees with what Davina talked about, and in other ways absolutely disagrees with it. So we do appreciate your time this morning, Joan, and thank you very much, and on behalf of everyone listening, all the best to you and your family in your ongoing life. Joan, thank you very much for listening and for talking to
you
on 105. Thanks, Joan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.